It is Super Bowl Sunday, and now some of you are looking, what? A couple things. I grew up in Florida, so I was always a Dolphin fan, but also liked the Bucks. And the Bucks were always kind of like that stray cat out on the street who never had anything, and so you would kind of give it some milk because you felt bad for it. That's kind of who the Bucks always were until they got some good Florida State players, right? Now, some of y'all hadn't seen the back of this, and that's what's kind of really crazy. And you say, how on earth could you possibly be wearing a Brady jersey? Listen, like they always say, it's about the name on the front of the jersey, not the name on the back, right? And besides that, if anybody is living proof that they can find redemption and don't need to be defined by their past relationships, experiences, or performance, it's Tom Brady, right? And he makes a perfect segue into talking about the toxicity in our lives, about our past relationships and performance and influences and whatnot. It's a perfect segue into, of course, this morning's subject matter about toxicity. We've been in a series about looking at the toxic people, influences, and products in our life. And the thing about toxins is that you don't realize that they're there. They build up over time, and they cause great harm, and they can eventually take you down. And you don't even realize they're there. You don't even realize you're breathing them in. And so in this series, there's always going to be a tendency for you to look at other people and think about somebody else. There's going to be a tendency to overlook some of the issues in your own life and say, I don't struggle with that. I don't have a problem with that. And this may be one of those mornings where that happens. So far we've talked about toxic people, and then last week we talked about toxic social media. How many of y'all took the challenge to walk away from social media for a season? Any of y'all? How many of y'all have had your masters come back to you and tell you that you're being disobedient and you need to come back? Now, if you delete it and you completely delete your account, you won't hear anything. But if you just quit going on there, you will. I've already gotten several people come back and say, yep, I've already gotten 4 emails. Some of you are like, they must not really want me if they didn't send me anything yet. It's probably because you completely delete. If you completely delete your account, you won't get anything at all. If you just quit going on there, then they will chastise you for not being a good, obedient servant like you're supposed to be and being on there like a slave. And so this week, though, we're going to begin talking about toxic thinking, about the thoughts that go through our mind that lead down a bad place. And most importantly, is kind of what you may have seen in there in the opening picture, is the toxic thinking that tells us that we need to make everybody happy, that we need to be a people pleaser, that we want everybody else to think right of us. And just like in the movie clip there from 27 Dresses, she looks at her life and she's like, well, it's because I'm trying to be like Jesus. I mean, that's after all what I'm doing. That's what I'm doing. And the thing about people pleasing is when somebody goes down that path, it doesn't seem toxic at all. It seems like they're a good person. It seems like they're doing the right thing. They're helpful. They're reliable. They're the person that you call when you're in a time of need. They're the person who is always, you know, ready to help out when you got to move. They're the person who, whenever you're in a bind, they'll always come through for you. And it seems like as if everything about what they're doing is virtuous and Christ-like. And isn't it even biblical to do that? And so some of you this morning are going to be looking at this going, well, how is this a bad thing? And verses kind of come to your mind. I'm good at coming up with verses too. Like to Paul, when he's writing to the Philippian church in chapter 2, he says, do nothing out of selfish ambition or in vain conceit, but each of you should look to the interest of others before you look to your own interests. I mean, that right there sounds exactly like what we're talking about, right? I mean, isn't that what all, I mean, that's Christ-like. That's biblical to put others' interests before my own, to not be looking out for selfish ambition, but to be looking at it as to how I can help other people. So how are you saying that's toxic? It seems like as if I'm doing exactly everything the Bible tells me to do. It seems like I'm being virtuous. How is this a bad thing? Well, with so many things that are toxic, it's just one molecule off. It's just one degree off where it needs to be. And the issue here typically is the motive. When there is a motive where you're doing these things out of love, where you're doing these things simply because you have a loving relationship with Jesus Christ that you'll enjoy for all eternity, and you're simply trying to share the love of Christ with somebody else like God has shared it in your own life, that's what Paul's talking about. Because in Philippians chapter 2, he goes on to say, I would hope that you would have the mind of Christ, that you would be Christ-like in the way that you live and act. Where we get one degree off is where the motivation just moves from a motivation of love to a motivation of guilt or a motivation of fear, like a fear that I'll be rejected or fear of failure at some point. And quite oftentimes, typically when somebody struggles with people-pleasing issues, there's been something somewhere along the past, because all of us have issues of rejection and failure, but there's been something somewhere along the way that sort of triggered this mechanism within us, where maybe it was a rejection. Maybe you felt rejected by your parents, or you could never live up or were never good enough for them. Maybe you had a boyfriend or a girlfriend early on that rejected you, or even a spouse that rejected you. And so from that point on, that the pain of rejection was so bad, you said, I'm never going to feel that again. And so you try to compensate for that by always trying to do things that will make other people happy so you don't have to experience that kind of rejection. It could have been at a job and you lost a job, or maybe you didn't get the grades you wanted, and so you don't want to go through that experience again. And so you're trying to continually, eternally compensate for that, just become a kind of a part of who you are. Or maybe it was a failure somewhere along the way where you didn't live up to an expectation, you didn't get what you wanted in something, and so you said, I don't want to go through failure again, and so I will do everything I can to make people happy with me. For others, it comes out of a fear of conflict because you don't like conflict. Maybe you grew up in a home where you were the peacemaker, and maybe your parents were always at each other, and so you felt like you had to be the peacemaker. That's continued on, that whenever there's conflict, you get real uneasy about things, and so you will do everything you can for everybody else to try to keep the peace, and you just want everybody just to be happy and everybody to be calm. And if you can contribute to that, you feel like you're becoming a peacemaker. Isn't that, after all, what God's telling us to do, to become peacemakers? And come back and say, but not like that. Not for that motivation. When your motivation is for acceptance or approval, and you feel like as if relationships are conditional on your performance, then we've moved off of where God wants you. We moved into the realm of that which is toxic. Psychiatrists, psychologists, all people in that category, put people-pleasing in the category of addiction. It can be an addictive experience. Because there's a dopamine hit. There's a high that you get when you get approval. It's the same thing we were talking about last week with social media. Social media is all about feeding on your people-pleasing desire. That's why you post things for people to approve and to get your likes. It happens in everyday life. That's why when somebody comes in and they dump their workload on you, even though you've got a full list of things to do, you put that on hold and you do it for them because you want to hear their thank you. You want to hear their congratulations. You want to get that pat on the back somewhere, and you get a high out of that. And so you find you're doing and you're doing and doing because you're doing it for the high, or for the sense of approval or acceptance that you get from it. And then that wears off, and you go and you seek it out again, and you seek validation again and again and again. And it says it becomes this addictive cycle, and it's in the category of codependency, if you will, where you're dependent on somebody else to give you what you need, that fix every single day of approval or acceptance. Now, this was something that Paul struggled with, and the same guy who wrote to the Philippian church and said, do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit, he goes on in the very next chapter of Philippians, and he says, I used to live my life chasing after everybody else's approval. And Paul goes into a little bit of the background of his life. He grew up in the Jewish Pharisaical schools, where he became a Pharisee, a leading Pharisee amongst the Jewish people. We know a lot about the Pharisees because Jesus has many run-ins with them, and so we see some of the things that they would do, and Jesus would talk about how Pharisees would do everything they could so that they could win the approval of everybody else around them. And in their currency of life, their status was all around who was the holiest, who was the closest to God, who was doing everything that God would want them to do. And so they would basically brag about how great of a relationship they had with God. And the way they would do that is they would make sure everybody could see them pray, and they'd be the ones standing up to pray, and they'd make a big show out of their prayers, and they'd always be in a public place, and they'd be very bold about it. Whenever they would give, they would make a big show out of it. Sort of the modern day would be if somebody, you know, were to, you know, make it rain in the offering plate and just drop it all down so everybody could see it. Or they would, you know, raise their hand in a Bible study and just say, I think that we really do need to be concerned about it. That's why I'm pledging $1,000 to this cause. And I hope the rest of y'all would follow after me. They would make a big show out of it, even to the point where it would get so ridiculous sometimes, where because God says that our offering should be a tenth, that'd be the first tenth of what you're given should be given up to God. And so what these crazy people for public acceptance would do, they would actually bring into the offering plate and sprinkle leaves. And you'd be like, well, what is that? Well, as I was picking my parsley this week before I put some on my dinner plate, I picked off one-tenth. Every tenth leaf I pulled off of the parsley branch because that belonged to God. And so I put this fragrant offering up to God because I would tenth everything. And Jesus is like, you guys are nuts. You guys are absolutely absolutely nuts to be doing this kind of thing. By the way, that thing's doing that thing again over on the side. They would wear outfits to show how pious they were. Now, I know we would never wear outfits to try to win everybody else's approval, but they would wear outfits to try to win everybody else's approval when it came to their holiness, and so they would put stuff on it. Like, you know that verse that talks about how the word, it's in Deuteronomy chapter 6, you know, never let the word of the Lord depart from you, but, you know, keep it, you know, on your forehead, keep it on your fingertips. They would literally put Bible verses and wear them on a headband. Literally, they have a little box of Bible verses they put on their headband because, after all, that's what it says to do, so I'm going to do it. And Paul would do all of this kind of stuff. They would let everybody know when they're fasting. You know, they'd come into work, oh, if I look like I'm famished, it's because I am, because I'm so holy and pure. I'm giving my life over to God to fast. Have you done that? I don't think you have. I'm doing it right now. You know, there's a 40-day fast. I'm doing 41. They would do this kind of stuff just so they could be more pious before people. And Paul talks about it. He goes, I was immersed into all that stuff. I got sucked into that lifestyle. It was all about trying to make everybody else around me happy and try to make everybody else think that I was doing everything that God wanted me to do. It got absolutely ridiculous. And Paul says, I look back on that. In Philippians chapter 2, he says, I look back on that, and it was ridiculous. I consider all of that a complete waste of time. I'm not going down that road of people-pleasing anymore. And then at the end of the book of Philippians, the next chapter, he talks about how he's learned how to be content. Now, this was an issue that he kind of brings back several times in his writings. Another one is when he's writing to the church in Corinth. The church in Corinth, some of the background of the church itself, is they were all about public appearances. They were all about what everybody thought of them, so much so that a lot of the letter to the Corinthians, 1 Corinthians, a lot of 1 Corinthians is all about their public display in front of everybody else, and he keeps telling them, you need to cut it out. And so the beginning of this letter in chapter 4, he writes this. He says, I care very little if I am judged by you or any other human court. He says, as a matter of fact, I don't even judge myself. Not that I'm innocent or anything, but my conscience is clear about this. He says, it's the Lord who judges me. So therefore, judge nothing before the appointed time, but wait until the Lord comes. And he'll bring to light what is hidden in the darkness and will expose the motives of the human heart. And at that time, each will receive their praise from God that is due to them. So he starts off, he says, I care very little if I am judged by you or any other human court. Now, The phrase there, human court, is kind of an interesting thing. When you look it up in the Greek, it doesn't actually say the word human court. It says by any other day of the people or people's day. And it's going back to, it flows out of what he started talking about in chapter 3. In chapter 3, he talks about how the Lord's day ultimately will come, the great judgment day of God. God ultimately one day will judge all of humanity. And so he's sort of comparing God's judgment, and he uses the word day of the Lord in chapter 3. So he's bringing back that same kind of idea, talking about the day of the Lord compared to the day of people. Now, when is the day of people's judgment? Every day. Every moment of every day. It seems like there's always somebody evaluating you, judging you, has something to say about you, some list about what you're doing right, some list about what you're doing wrong. And so he's talking about the day of people's judgment. It's every single day. He says, I care very little about you or any other group of people who want to convene to have some evaluation on my life. Now, when he says, I care very little, he doesn't say I don't care at all. When he says, I care very little, I've gotten the right proportion. It's as if there's a complaint box, it would be about this big, right? And I know you've got your list of complaints. They're not going to fit. So if you want to give me some complaints, you're going to have to get it on here so that way it'll fit in the box. And I care very, very little, very little. I don't have a lot of capacity for your complaints. It's just very, very small right through here. Paul would also write to the church in Galatia about this same issue. And he says, listen, you've got to choose whether you're going to be chasing after God's approval or the people around you's approval. And so he says it this way. He says, am I now trying to win the approval of human beings or of God? Am I trying to please people? If I were still trying to please people, I could not be a servant of Christ. What he's alluding to here is this. It's a truth that, you know, everybody would acknowledge that they know, and that is God has a plan for your life. Would you agree with that? God has a plan for your life. He made you, he created you, he formed you with a purpose. Everybody has a sense that there's a reason for their being. There's a meaning to life. And it's because God's created you a purpose. And he gives us some insight into this in his word. He says in Jeremiah 29, that I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord. Not to harm you, but to bring you to a good place, to give you a hope and to give you a future. I've got plans for you. So we all would agree God has plans for us. Can we also agree that everybody else has a plan for your life too? Right? God's got a plan for you, but so does everybody else. And their plans for you are about where you're going to work, how much money you should make, the kind of clothes you should wear, the kind of car you should drive, what emblems you should have on the things that you drive, or your accessories or your clothes. They've got a plan for who you should marry and when you should marry. They've got a plan for when you should have kids and how many kids you should have. Right? They have a plan for everything about your life all the way down. And Paul's looking and says, you got to decide. Are you going to be living for your plan, or sorry, for their plan, or for God's plan of your life? You've got to choose. You know, which approval are you chasing after? God's got a place he wants to lead you, and very rarely do the other people in your life is their plan in line with God's plan for your life. Very rarely. Sometimes, yes, but very rarely. You need to be able to check those two things to see if they add up. And so, you know, the question is your motive behind what you're doing in chasing after God's plan for your life, or is it about somebody else's plan for your life? And Paul says, I care about your input. I just care very little. I put it in a very small box. Mental health begins with being able to say, I care very little what you think of me. So turn to the person next to you and say, I care very little what you think of me. Didn't that feel fun? Yeah, y'all are laughing, right? Because it feels something good. If only that were true. Whew. Boy, sure would feel good to say that and mean it. See, you're laughing right now sort of out of a nervous laughter because you say it like you want to believe it, but you know you don't believe it. But there's something cathartic about looking at somebody and say, I care very little what you think. I care very little what you think. I care. I just put it in the proper box. I don't have a lot of capacity for what you think I ought to be doing right now. I care. I'll put it in the suggestion box. But I'm going to run this through what God has for me and the plans he has for me and see if I have time for that after I pursue after what God wants me to be doing. So I care very little about that. Then he goes on, he says, I don't even judge myself. My conscience is clear, but that doesn't mean that I'm innocent. What he's saying here is I've learned to ignore the voices in my head. Those voices say, am I enough? Am I good enough? Am I worthy of being loved? Am I a good husband? Am I a good wife? Am I a good mother? Am I a good father? Am I a good kid? Am I enough? Am I a good team member? Am I worthy of being, you know, employed here? You know, what if they found out? What if I fail? What if they figure out that I'm not as smart as everybody thinks I am, or I'm not as creative as everybody thinks I am, or that I, you know, those ideas were just ones I sort of stole, repackaged, and reformulated and kind of passed off as my own? What if they find that out about me? All these voices keep coming in and keep coming in and keep coming in. And Paul says, you know, I care very little what any of y'all think about me, and I ignore the voices in my own head that are making me, pushing me towards wanting to do everything for everybody else. And he says, my conscience is clear. I'm clearing that stuff out. I've got a little box for you, and I've got no void. I've got no box whatsoever for that voice inside my head. I've got no space for it. And he says, not that I'm innocent. Not that I'm not doing anything wrong. Not that I don't have failures. Not that I don't have faults. Not that I don't mess up again and again and again. I just don't have any room for the voice that keeps bringing it up. I don't have any room for the voice that keeps condemning me day after day after day and asking me all these questions. Am I good enough? Or are people going to love me if I do all of this? I mean, for the time of Adam and Eve, that's the question everybody's been asking is, can I be loved because of my sin? What does Adam and Eve do? They hide. They put on fig leaves. They make up stories. They lie because there's this little voice inside their head that says, nobody will love you after what you've done. God won't love you because of what you've done, and the person you're with won't love you because of what you've done, so you need to hide from each other and hide from God. And so we do. And Paul says, I don't listen to those voices anymore. My conscience is clear. I don't have any place for that. Not that I'm innocent, not that I'm perfect. I trust that someday God is going to judge me. That's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for that day when God ultimately is going to judge me. And so he says, have just a little space for what other people think of you. Have no space for the voice inside your head, but make a big, big, huge place for what God thinks of you. Ultimately, trust your care and your life over to what God thinks of you. He says, it's the Lord who judges me. So there's nothing before the appointed time. I love how in the writer of Ecclesiastes says, God will make all things beautiful in its time. If you've ever been doing a renovation project, right now Pastor Micah is working on his house, and it is an absolute disaster. Is it not? But there's this thing where if you go over and look at it, he'll tell you this vision of what it's going to be, right? there's this beautiful picture that he can see in his mind of what the house is going to look like. And he keeps telling it to Katie every single day. This is going to be great. 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 And it's like as if God's looking at your life. And if you look at yourself right now, and if somebody else looks at you right now, while you are a, as we say, work in progress, works in progress don't always look all that good. A work in progress who doesn't see God's master plan and his vision for what he has for your life, it's hard to see that sometimes, right? But you have to go through the tearing up. You have to go through the scraping off. You have to go through the sanding and the grinding before you can get to that finished product. And along the way, it doesn't always look quite so pretty, does it? It's a work in progress. Your life is a work in progress. And other people will walk in and they'll just look and go, this is a disaster. You spent money on this place? Really? You did? You spent money on that place. Really? It's a hole. It's a hole that you are going to live in like a groundhog or something. That's what you're going to do. And there's a lot more winter coming where what I'm seeing at your place, right? That's kind of what you think. And other people will look to you, and if you try to, what if Micah were trying to do a fluff and stuff on his place before I came over? Just so it all looked good. Would that be worth his time? No. It'd be counterproductive. It'd be a waste of money, and it'd be a waste of time. Just so I'd walk in and go, oh, this place looks beautiful, man. Great decision. No, he says, this is who it is. If you don't like it, you can either pitch in and help, or you can check back with me in a couple months. Do you know how freeing it would be to be able to say that about your own life? I'm a work in progress. I understand there's some things I got to change. Put them in the complaint box. I'm going to process that through with God. There's some of those we're going to find out are valid, things I do need to change, things I do need to work on. I'm working on that. But God's ultimately going to judge me as to whether or not I've done it or not, because I'm a work in progress, to judge nothing until the appointed time, because on the appointed time, God says, I'm going to make all things beautiful in its time. I'll even take the evil things that people have put in your life, and I'll do something beautiful out of that. I work all things for the good. I can work with that. I can work with that. I can work with that. And there'd be some people who say, I can't work with that. And you say, okay, that's okay. God can. I'm not living my life for you and for your plans. I'm living my life for the plans God has for me. So it says, judge nothing before the appointed time, but wait until the Lord comes. Wait until the Lord comes. He'll bring to light the things that are hidden in the darkness and will expose, here it is, the motives of the heart. See, God says, I'm going to bring out the motives. Now, earlier I said the difference between somebody who is a toxic people-pleasing problem and somebody who is a virtuous, good Christian, Christ-like, it has to do with the motives. That's what he's talking about in this section here from chapter 3 into chapter 4. He's talking about motives. If you go back to chapter 3, he talks about our relationship with Jesus Christ. He says, you know, this life is about nothing more than our loving relationship with Jesus Christ that you'll enjoy for all eternity. And in this life, once you begin that relationship, the question is what will you do? What will you build on that relationship? What will you build based on your foundational relationship with God? And he says, you know, there's different kind of building materials you can use. Now, I understand that biblical literacy is probably not extremely high, and so I'm going to sort of use the illustration Paul draws from that probably more of you all would know than you would 1 Corinthians chapter 3. The story of the three little pigs, right? You got different building materials. The little pigs are built out of different stuff. The first two pigs built out of what? Straw and sticks. Sticks, wood, whatever, yep. So you can build out of that. The third pig, his stuff lasts, and it was built out of bricks, right, or stones, whatever you might say. And he uses the exact same metaphor. It's almost like he's telling us the story of the three little pigs. Just like with the three little pigs, you can build whatever you want to build. You can build with wood, hay, or straw. That's actually, you can look it up, chapter 3. You can build with wood, hay, or straw. Or you can build with things like gold, silver, precious stones. Now, you can build whatever you want. But when the big bad wolf comes, or when the day of God's judgment comes, it'll be revealed for the quality of work and the kind of work that was put into it. What's going to happen when you put to fire wood, hay, and straw? It'll get burned up. It's not going to last. But if you build with gold, silver, precious stones, or bricks, you put that to fire and it lasts through the test of time. Not even the big bad wolf can tear that thing down. So if you're building your life with poor motives, like trying to please people around you, all of that's going to be lost. Everything you sought to get out of that's all going to go away when you die. God be like, okay, you got your reward. Your reward was the approval and the acceptance of everybody else around you. You got that. Enjoy it. It's not coming with you into eternity. He says, you will suffer loss. You'll be saved, but only like somebody who is escaping through the flames. What a picture, huh? You just got out with barely even the skin on your back, because even the shirt you were wearing got burnt off. Why? because the motives for all of that people-pleasing stuff that you were doing that looked so virtuous and looked so Christ-like had nothing to do with your relationship with Jesus Christ. It had everything to do with how people saw you and what you thought or what they thought of you. It says, however, if you built with stones or gold or silver, those kind of things, that's the kind of stuff that lasts. That's the pure motive. That is a golden, pure heart. That's gold. That's like silver. Nothing can take that away. And he says, and there will be a reward. And so he's kind of coming back to that same idea here. He says, and he'll bring to light the hidden, expose the motives of the heart. And at that time, each will receive their praise from God. Whose approval, whose praise are you ultimately after? God's or somebody else's? Now, because you're seeking after the praise of God, that could cause you to do a lot of wonderfully kind things that are going to make a lot of other people happy, right? It looks the same. All the pigs' houses look good on day one, right? They all look great. But over time and all eternity, after the day of the Lord, it really shows for what it really is. And the question is what is the motive behind what you're doing? Now, I'd like to be able to say, only you know. But you don't, do you? Right? The heart's deceitful above all things. We lie to ourselves continually. We will literally drink toxins not knowing that they're toxins. We will do toxic things not knowing it's toxic. We will live toxic lives not knowing that our thinking and our behavior is toxic. We do it because we think that we're on the right path. And so you have to sort of begin with this and just say, God, help me examine and think through how much do I really care about what other people think of me? Am I willing to do what is right and what pleases you regardless of what everybody else around here me thinks? Am I willing to take their opinions and their thoughts and I'm willing to process them through you and say, is this somebody who's trying to lead me closer to a relationship with you or somebody trying to pull me apart? Am I worried about everybody else's approval or am I worried about your approval and yours alone? Can I trust that you'll make all things beautiful even if other people can't see it? We join hands as we close in prayer. Father, I thank you for your grace and your love, that your approval isn't something we have to chase after, whether it's something that we just have to accept from you, that you've already given it. You've already deemed us worthy of sending your Son, Jesus Christ, to die for us, to give his life in our place. Help us realize, Lord, there is nothing we can ever do to make you love us any more than you already do right now. So, Father, may we just submit before you the things that we do and the way that we live, Father, that we might be able to put the complaints and the criticisms of others in its healthy, right place, in the small little place that we have available for that. Help us ignore and to silence the voices inside our head, which are continually condemning and questioning everything we do and chasing after approval. And help us live for your plans that you have over our life, and not the plans everybody else puts in. And in Jesus' name we pray. Amen.